some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Rated G Radio. This is our first morning broadcast of the week, and I'm excited to have you here. We're going to have Leonard Simchuk with us in just a couple of moments. He's the author of several books, but the one we're going to talk about today, well, talk about anything he wants to, but it's Kookaburra's Last Laugh, and it's surprising to me, and I'm really enjoying this. So we're going to talk to Leonard in just a couple of moments. I'll welcome him, but like we always do, I'm going to give you the roadmap for where we've been, where we're going for the week. So if you are a new listener, number one, welcome to the show. But, you know, then you're going, well, what do I do next? Well, what you're going to do next is follow the program. There's a little follow button to the upper left-hand corner of the show page right there. You'll click that and you'll get the option to either get a text or email update. You'll tell the system and then you'll get an update every day that we're live. We're usually live 5 or 6 days a week, just depending upon what's going on with summer, maybe a couple of days less if I can squeeze that in. And you'll get updates. So that way you don't have to guess about what time and all of that good stuff. Or if there's a particular guest that you want to hear, you'll be able to easily identify where that's at. Last night on the show, we had Peter Jude, your creative solutionist. He is a voiceover artist and marketing guru that helps people in a variety of industries with their marketing and getting a wider bang for their buck when they, you know, wisely choose to invest in marketing their products. We talked about Kathy Porter's book, Earth's Ultimate Conflict, and the voiceover work he did for, we did the whole book, so it's, I guess just call it a book on tape, but how his work on that was different than some of the other projects that he's worked on, and really enjoyable conversation. But I always love having Peter on. You never know what's going to happen or what he's going to say, and that was last night, so I hope you'll tune in on the archives for that. Tomorrow we've got author Mark Bago, and I met Mark, probably like 5-6 months ago at Mary Wilson's birthday party, you know, of the Supremes. And we hung out and got a chance to talk. We've had to reschedule a couple of times just for life circumstances on both of our ends. So we're going to have Mark on tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. And then tomorrow night, if you're in the Hollywood area or Los Angeles area, you are welcome to attend Sherry Payne, also of the Supremes. Sherry Payne was lead singer of the Supremes from 73 to 77. She has a new album release party out for her new project called Vintage Sherry, and it's going to be at Rage Nightclub in West Hollywood. And as everybody knows, I don't drink, but I do love some nice bar food. I shouldn't because I'm trying to keep, you know, the waistline down. But if you want to just go and have a snack, they've got incredible food that will, I say, shock you, surprise you for being, you know, a That's July 27th at Rage Nightclub. So go check that out. Thursday on Rated LGBT Radio, my co-host Rob Watson and I will be talking current events of the day. And then Friday for the Friday night dance party, I don't know what's going to happen. My guest that I had scheduled for 4 months sent me a note over the weekend and said, oh, I'm going to go camping and I can't do the show. I've never had anybody cancel and then say, I'm going camping instead. So we got to reschedule. I'm going to cut the artist a little bit of a break because I say family, but he's not really family. He's like cousins, you know, ex-husbands type of a thing. You know, I'd have to draw you a pie chart and a diagram and go through a bunch of stuff. But I've known Dwayne Moore for 25 years, and he's got a new EP out with his band Muggy On. And so we're going to get Dwayne on another non-camping weekend for his appearance. So that will be fun because they always do great music, and he's a great showman. I love listening to him on the CD, but I also love catching them in person. So if you get a chance to, you know, see Dwayne perform, he's toured all over the country, but he's predominantly based in the Phoenix, Arizona area. I highly recommend that you do that. Now, without further ado, I want to welcome our guest for the day, Leonard Simchuk. He is a well-respected author and so much more, but I had the opportunity to meet him last Tuesday at a group event called Lit Up in Orange County that's hosted by Maddie and her team. I also know Maddie through SCWA, But the introduction officially came through my neighbors and good friends, Jeff and Jill, who are always introducing me to interesting people. And as soon as they saw Leonard walk in the, I think it was Keen's Coffee, they said, "Oh my God, Leonard's here, you got to meet him because he's got a great story." So I twisted his arm and so he's here today. So how's that for a buildup? That's a horrible buildup, Leonard, but I want to thank you for being here bright and early today. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I love the build-up, Garrett. It was a pleasure meeting you at the coffee shop, and I felt that we kind of instantly hit it off.
We connected. And so, you know, and I'll tell you, I'm really, really lucky to know people like Jeff and Jill because they, you know, they're very discerning about, okay, this is somebody who you need to meet. Maybe that's somebody who you don't need to meet. So they're a little protective of me at the same time. So really when an introduction's made, I know that this is somebody who's, you know, it's important for me to know who they are. So I'm grateful to them. But more importantly, I'm grateful that, you know, you are such a talented writer. I never know when, you know, I'm scheduling the guests, what their writing is, because I usually don't read the book until like the night before or the day before, just so I can get a flavor for what's going on. But I was pleasantly surprised digging into Kookaburra's Last Laugh yesterday, you know, because I'm used to, you know, reading a book about, and when the gun fired and the body hit the ground, and that's usually how the books start. But, and so I wasn't sure what was going to happen here. And I could not stop turning the pages yesterday. You have written a non-murder mystery, at least up until where I'm at in the book. There might be, I don't know. You'll tell us, maybe. And, but the pages kept turning and turning and turning, and the relationships and the dynamics. And I felt like I was down in Australia as I was diving into the book. So, we're going to get to all of that in a little bit because, hey, we're here to sell some books today. So I always tell everybody, if you're watching the show, you know, I say watching because you actually do have it on your computer screen. There's a link under Leonard's name that's going to take you to his Facebook or it's going to take you to his website. And then also under Kookaburra's Last Laugh, that takes you to Amazon. So you can go and buy the book today. He's also got several others that are up there. I'll encourage you at the beginning, middle, and end of the show, as a reminder, everybody, when you go buy the book, you need to buy 10 copies. You buy one for yourself and then gift 9 to other people because you've known 9 other people and they're going to have birthdays or anniversaries or other events happening this year, and they will thank you for giving them the gift of good reading. So there's our plug for the first, you know, quarter of the show. But Leonard, tell us about yourself. This is my first chance really to get to know who you are. So what led up to your career as a writer? Where did you grow up? Tell us all the good stuff.
All right. Well, listen, my main passions in life are kind of personal, spiritual growth, writing, and speaking. And so the two passions, I've been a therapist for 40 years and been writing for over 30 years. So those have been my passions. I grew up in the south side of Chicago. And there's a lot of strong Polish flavors in my books because I was born in a Polish household. All 4 grandparents migrated from Poland. And then I moved to Australia, and I lived there for 14 years. So I had both of my children were born in Australia. So I loved Australia, and so I realized when I write a novel, it's got to be in Australia. It's got to take the place, and the settings are so incredible. So all my novels really take place in Australia. And the main character in my novel is Peter Panofsky. And, you know, Garrett, it was kind of fate. When I was a boy, I'd be talking with them, and sometimes I'd do a prank, and I'd call up a friend on the phone. I says, "Hi, this is Peter Panofsky." I don't know, that just name popped into my mind, and I would pretend I was Peter Panofsky. And then it would just go there. That was just a boy. And then when I started writing my novel, I says, "Well, what name should I choose?" Well, of course, it has to be Peter Panofsky.
Of course.
A Polish guy. And so that's how Peter Panofsky was born. He was born when I was a kid.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, talk about bringing, you know, your childhood to life. I love that. So why did you have this penchant for doing prank calls and things like that? Is it just the... because, you know, that's what kids did, or, you know, did somebody dare you? Or
I think that's
how did
what
that
kids,
happen?
You know, what I would do. The funny thing is I'd say, "Hi, this is Peter Panofsky. I'm calling from the Garrett Radio Show, and you've got a surprise, you know. So if you can guess the correct answer, you're going to get a 3 box of chocolate." Anyway, I'd be playing pranks on my kids, and I was able to have different voices, and they never could catch on. It was me until the end. So I don't know. It was just one of those stupid things that kids did at the time.
I love it. And thank goodness that we didn't have caller ID back then either, so you can still get away with it. So, yeah, no kidding.
That's right.
So what caused your family to move to Australia originally? Because I'm going to assume that maybe part of that is, you know, autobiographical in a very slight way in The Kookaburra's Last Laugh, because you do talk about that a little bit. Is that a little truth to life?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, I was married at the time, and so Mary Lou and I went to Australia. We were only going to go there for 1 year. It turned into 14 years, two kids. And I really wanted to – my daughter lives in Australia now, so she moved back there. So it was one of those things of fate. I do believe in synchronicity. So even meeting you at the coffee shop, there's this synchronicity that occurs. And when I write a book, it's really a very fascinating process, because – it's like I have one foot in fact and one foot in fiction, and they kind of blend together. It kind of blew my mind as I was writing, like even my first novel was Cuckoo Forevermore. It was published in 1996, and the revised edition was published last year. But that book showed me, I said, whoa, because I was working at a child and adolescent psychiatry department in Sydney. And I thought, geez, what's happening here is crazy. It wasn't the patients, it was the staff. I said, this is crazy. No one's going to believe what happens. And so I figured I had to write this down. And so that started me on my, that was back in the 80s, on my first novel. And then I've been writing ever since. It was just like, once you write your first book, it's like I'm bitten. I got to keep on writing.
So how do you go – well, let me ask you this. So how did you go from making prank phone calls to deciding that, you know what, I'm going to grow up and become a therapist and help people? But did you ever want to do anything else before you decided therapy was, you know, your career
yes.
choice?
I was in a Catholic seminary for 8 years. So
holy cow.
I was in the Catholic seminary 8 years. And then when I decided to leave, I said, you know, what am I going to do? And I said, I love helping people. So it was kind of a natural fit to walk into therapy. So to become a therapist, that just flowed really well. I really loved helping people, still love helping people. And but, you know, the amazing thing is that I've been in the business a long time, and talking to other colleagues who have been therapists for a long time, Garrett, is that the clients I work with really are reflections of me. So anyone that I work with, I know, okay, they're helping me deal with my issues. And I try to reflect that in my books, because my books are all relational, and it's about Peter Panowski's evolution of a man, his coming of age, so to speak, and his clients give him opportunities to grow and stretch. Usually you think when you see a therapist, the therapist is there to help you, but in reality, clients help therapists stretch. A lot of clients don't realize this, but they're really helping therapists also work on the similar issues that they are working on. It's kind of a very fascinating process that people don't really talk about, and I wanted to kind of reflect that in the books about this relationship between client and therapist, and it's not just a one-way thing.
Well, and that's very, you know, zen and metaphysical of you, if I can be so bold to say that, because I read something not too long ago where they were saying, you know, for all the things that you like about, you know, other people, that's a reflection of you, and all the things that you really hate about other people, that's also a reflection of you. And so it's, you know, everything that you see out there and how you react to it is really how you're reacting to yourself about, you know, situations. And I'm probably paraphrasing that horribly incorrectly, but that was kind of like the gist that I had as a takeaway. And in reading your book, that just seemed to be very clear to me, that it's like, okay, I'm going to get a little therapy in this, you know, along the way too. And, you know, some of the things that Peter was going through originally in the first, you know, section of the book, talking about his family and relationships and things like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to start dealing with some of this on my own. And so it was kind of surprising and eye-opening for me, because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to start opening up a therapy, you know, booth for myself. I'm going to have to start taking notes and doing all of these things as I read along in the book. But,
this is so true. It's what you're saying, Garrett, is the old saying, if you spot it, you got it. You know, if you see it in somebody else, you reflect on the other. Really, Kookaburra's Last Laugh, one of the drafts was written before I wrote a book called The Roadmap Home, Your GPS Inner Peace. And so a lot of the concepts in Kookaburra's Last Laugh about self-discovery and about really going inward, some of those concepts I ended up putting into a self-help book. because as you say, as you're reading the book, you see while Peter has to deal with his own anxiety, his relationship with his dad, with his mom, he has to really kind of dive deep to some of his inner demons, and his inner demons get exposed, and he's got to face his inner demons or not grow up, so to speak, you know? It is therapy, and it's my therapy. I think Stephen King also said writing is his therapy. Well, writing is my therapy, and hopefully people who read the book, it's going to be their therapy as well.
I think so. You know, and again, just enjoyable. I think one of the things that I struggle with sometimes when I read books, and luckily most of the guests that are on the show, I can breeze through their books, and it's always a joy, especially if they're coming from SCWA or Lit Up. Just quality writers. But there are some books that you'll pick up and they have $8 words that you know the writer is using because the writer really wanted to impress you with their vocabulary of $8 words, and they serve no practical purpose. And, you know, you struggle trying to figure out what the writer is trying to accomplish. And in Kookaburra's Last Laugh, it just easily goes from character development to the next situation, and you go in between, you know, certain events that are taking place. And I was shocked. I don't know why I was shocked, Leonard, but I thought maybe this therapist is going to be writing this crazy book. And here I am reading this enjoyable story about this poor man trying to, you know, figure out what he's going to do in life and how he's going to react to the relationships. Why do you think we have so many, as adults, you know, this is more of a therapist question, but you're tying into the story. Why do you think we have so many things that happen to us early that we've either blocked out or, you know, turn a blind eye to that end up either negatively or positively impacting our lives and choices and, you know, love and things like that as we grow up? Why does that become so powerful?
Well, you know, the reason it happens is that we're growing up. I have a grandson who's 9 months old, and I see my grandson looking in the world. His eyes are open. Everything's new, curious. Wow, he's speaking his truth. If he's angry, he screams. If he's happy, he smiles. He's just so pure in the world. And then I know that as he starts aging, he's going to have to adapt to the world to survive. So if he does something his parents don't like, he's going to curtail that behavior. And we're kind of taught in life that, you know, to not really speak our truth after a while. You know, if you feel sad and you tell your parents, I'm sad, no, you don't. Or don't be mad. I mean, we start suppressing, pushing down our feelings. And the strange thing is that over time, we start putting them into closets. We put them out here and put them out there. And then in life, part of our job as adults is to start clearing our rooms of this unwanted furniture that we've been taking on. And so, you know, when I grew up in the south side of Chicago, my father left. He left the first time when I was 6 and the second time I was 9 years old. And so my mom worked in a factory, raised 4 kids on her own. And in my family, our job was to survive and to adapt. So I became over-adaptive. I knew how to adapt and accommodate. So I'm really good at reading people and connecting. That was a skill I learned to survive. But, you know, even now at, you know, I'm 68. Even at my age, I still am. I find parts of my past that get triggered. I says, wow, this is a piece that I'm working on. I think life is, we're always kind of trying to work through some of the crap that we've been given growing up so that we can heal and then expand ourselves. We're kind of releasing old energy and expanding and growing. And again, that's what I try to convey in my novels with this character, Peter Panofsky. So he's growing just like I'm growing. And, you know, he has to deal with his relationship with his father, very dysfunctional. And he's got to really come to grips with that, which is something I had to come to grips with, of course, with my father. Writers, we tend to take our own emotional angst and whatever and then put it into a book. Because I can tell, you know, the funny thing is I can read any book, any novel, even novels are easy, and I can tell what's the inner issues the writer is going through, because the themes that the writer chooses and the characters, okay, these are her own issues, and that's kind of just how it works, and that's, we get a chance to play with our psyche by putting it on the paper.
That must be like, it's probably like giving you like a crystal ball. And it's like, okay, this person didn't get enough hugs, and this person, you know, did this, and this person did that. So I think that it's almost an unfair advantage for you, Leonard.
Well, I don't know. It's unfair. It just is what it is. You know, my brother's a carpenter. He can walk into a house and he can look and he says, you know, Leonard, your door jamb is off or this and that. It's just, you know, it's part of my training, you know. So I look at it and says, oh, okay, because people start revealing their inner world as soon as they start opening their mouth and they tell me a little bit about themselves. It says, oh, okay, that's their story. Their story that they start telling starts showing me what's going on in their life and who they are.
So you told me that you have been a therapist for 40 years and a writer for 30. Are you still a therapist today, or you just focus mostly on writing?
I spend my time half writing, half therapy. So really, I've got days devoted to writing, and I've been doing that for quite a number of years. I moved out to California 8 years ago, and in Chicago, I made the decision. Says, you know, I love therapy, I love writing. I've got to do them both. And so I just, you know, I 3 days and 3 days. So 3 days writing, 3 days therapy. So I just kind of just divided up my life. And sometimes my writing will take a little bit more precedence, depending upon where I'm at in a book. And sometimes my therapy will. So it really kind of varies. And then I also coach authors on getting books into print. So I've helped a lot of people get their books actually published and into prints, because I've been following the publishing industry for the last 30 years, and it's been a very interesting journey. And that's also given me great gratification, because I'm kind of a midwife to other authors, helping them get their books out there.
Well,
you know, Garrett, I think we're all called to express ourselves. It's kind of a human need. You know, some people express your way of expressing is in vocal, in radio. You're getting your message out there. It seems to me with you, Garrett, you have to do it, don't you?
Well, that's a whole different therapy session in itself. But yeah, you're right. You're right. But so when you are, you know, because I guess I want to go back to this, and I'm just more curious than anything else. Were you always a writer, and you just kind of had that on the back burner, or did it take 10 years of hearing people's stories and helping them with all of their things to have you say, okay, now I'm ready to write a book because I've heard it all?
No, you know, this is interesting, because it's funny. I just went to my dental hygienist to get my cleaning, and I was talking to her, and she says, you know, when I was a kid, I had my teeth cleaned. I said, oh, I'd hate to be a hygienist. And here she is, a hygienist. When I was growing up, and I remember writing, and then in college, I was taking some English classes and whatever, and I said, you know, the worst job anybody could do was to be a writer. Who on earth would want to write? And then what happened in my life is that people started giving me as gifts pens and pencil sets, saying, what the heck is this? I mean, you know, I'm getting pens and pencils. And then I was a director of a family therapy program in Sydney, and even my students would give me pens and pencils. They'd give the other trainers, you know, a picture of a vase or whatever. And I got pens and pencils. I said, what the hell is this? And then it dawned on me, well, duh, you're supposed to write. I mean, come on, wake up, fella. And then I said, okay, I get it. I'm supposed to write. Let's get down to it. I mean, I was writing over the years, but all right, I get the message. Let's just write. And so I figured, okay, let's. And I always tell people who are writing a book, write what you know first, because that's the best thing. So I've been keeping a journal for 40 years. And that's the first thing I do in the morning. I wake up and I write in my journal. And as you know, Kookaburra's Last Laugh is written in journal format. So it's easy for me, because that's how I live my life, is in journal. And then, of course, it takes place in therapy, because I know therapy, and you know, I've seen so many crazy things happen in over the last 40 years that are unbelievable. And I figured, okay, I got to put some of this stuff in and let people really see what goes behind the, you know, let's pull the curtain and let's see what's behind the curtain, so people can see what really goes on in a therapist's mind. So I figured I just had to do it. I wanted to kind of see myself as a John Grisham of psychotherapy, you know?
Well, then we have many more books that we can look forward to enjoying from you, Leonard. So, and by the way, everybody, just a refresher here, because we need to make sure we sell some books here for Leonard today. If you are looking at the show page, under Leonard's name, it's hyperlinked to go to his website, and then under Kookaburra's Last Laugh, it will link you to Amazon, and you can go buy 10 copies. You can buy 20 if you want, but buy 10 copies. You buy one for yourself, and then you gift the 9 others to other people that you know. That's always a nice thing to do. But we've also got a link to Leonard's YouTube channel, too. So you've got some videos that you're putting out there as well.
I do. You know, I have lots of videos. You know, I was also, you know, the thing is being a writer, I've got so many other books that I'm kind of begging to be birthed. So I really have multiple projects working on at the same time. And one of my books is upcoming, which is Living Naked, Write with Your Authentic Self. And so, you know, again, I do a lot of, you know, self-development, personal development. And so my problem, Gary, is I just have so many interests. It's like juggling all these things. And fortunately, I get to do them as part of my life, you know, make videos and give talks and write books and help clients. It makes my life very full.
Well, and I wanted to bring up the videos because now, I usually spend like the last 10 minutes talking about marketing and the business side of being a writer and all of that, and we'll be doing all of that as well. But it's interesting to find people who are creative, who are really known for one thing, in your case, being a successful author, and then finding different ways to help, social media eyes or brand and market, you know, those efforts. And I think that, you know, getting your YouTube channel and having those videos that are out there is just a really smart way to help accentuate your brand of being an author. So, I mean, did you know that, how soon after you did your first video did you know that, okay, I've got to do more?
Well, you know, my friends keep on telling me that those who are very much into social media says, Leonard, you got to make more videos.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a whole bunch of videos. It's just I haven't gotten them up, you know. So I've been I've been doing like these short 1 to 2 minute video clips.
Yeah.
And which work out really well. And I have some longer 5 minutes or whatever. But again, it's like I've got these. I think all authors have to juggle all their priorities. And those of us who are creative, my passion is to create. I love to create. That's what I love to do. So that gives me the greatest joy when I'm in creation mode. And then marketing and putting it out there, that's not exactly my passion. So that somehow kind of gets to the left side, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, you like doing the shiny thing that you're really good at. So, you know, you want to sit here and write and write and write. And it's fun to do the videos, but then it's like, oh, now I have to put it into iMovie.
Yes, exactly.
And it takes 10 minutes to upload. And then you got to put it into YouTube. And then YouTube takes it, you know. So there's, you know, you have all of those different things. Because people just, you know, click on your YouTube channel and go, oh, Peter, or Leonard's got a bunch of, videos here. I need to go check them all out. And then, you know, you don't have any idea what goes on to get that 2-minute video up and out. And sometimes, you know, it's the behind the scenes stuff, Leonard, that, you know, takes some of the fun away from, you know, doing that shiny thing of making the video or writing Kookaburra's Last Laugh. That's, we tend to forget that there's a lot of other stuff that goes on to, you know, make that creative happen. But
ladies and gentlemen, we're
almost at the half mark. So we're going to take a real quick break and you give everybody a bathroom break, which means you can turn up the speaker really loud, go get a cup of coffee, refill your cereal bowl or something like that. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more with Leonard Simchak, author of Kookaburra's Last Laugh. And this is a brief message from It Matters Radio. You're going to hear a shameless plug for my album and then a commercial for our friends at Rainbow Brew.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Hey, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the Adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, a deaf man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, Letty, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
Well, that's a mouthful if I ever heard one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
Hey everybody, it's Garrett Miller. Check out my brand new album, Blonde Jesus, voted number one rock electronica, and the hit single, Gay Wedding.
It's a nice day for a gay wedding.
Your copy today at GarrettMiller.com.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
Welcome back, everybody. We are joined today by Leonard Simcheck. He's the author of Kookaburra's Last Laugh, among a couple of other books that are available on Amazon. You can go buy that today. The links are on the show page. Just click, 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 and it will take you all the important places that you need to stay in contact with Leonard and purchase the merch. So, Leonard, as we come back to the show, one of the things that I always love to ask writers about, because as a budding writer myself, I'm always interested in what other people do. It's not that I'm trying to keep up with the Johnsons, but I'm always trying to find better ways to manage my time and be creative out there. And what better form to ask than when I have successful people like yourself on the show? So you've mentioned in the first part of the program that you do your therapy 3 days a week and you write 3 days a week, sometimes more, sometimes a little bit less. But when you do have those writing days, what's your structure like? How do you manage your time and your day to make sure that you stay on track for what your goals are?
That's an excellent question. And I always ask other writers this question too, because I've been to many, many writers' conferences, and I always love when I hear other writers talk about what they do. Well, I have a routine. I like a structure. So when I'm on a roll, I start Sunday evening. So Sunday evening before I go to bed, I kind of outline what I want to do. And the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I get up at 6:30 in the morning. I do my journaling and I do my meditation. And if I got time, I go for a walk to the beach. And then I get on the computer. So I'm on the computer. If I can get on by 8, that's terrific. Sometimes it's not. Usually I'm on by 8, but I'm doing some other writing, kind of like warm-up writing. I do automatic writing, and then so come 9 o'clock, I'm on my project. So I'm kind of working from 9 to 2. So and when I'm in a zone, it's like I forget to eat or whatever. I'm just so immersed into it. So I'll be working intensely from 9 to 2. And then the next day, let's say Tuesday, I'll come back to repeat the same thing. I'll review what I did the previous day and then do that from Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then I let it sit, but I might dabble with it a little bit later on in the week. And I think when I first book, Cuckoo Forevermore, which I was writing in the 80s, I wanted to know how long would it take. So, writers need motivation. So I give myself, back then I would do a check for every hour I worked on the book and a check for every page that I completed. That was my motivation. I like to give gold stars, so to speak. You give yourself a gold star. So if I have a deadline, I want to finish 8 pages a day. That's what my deadline is and what I need to do. So it's good to have a target and motivation. So I motivate myself. I love rewards. I love accomplishing. And I love accountability. So those are my three main motivators. So if I can be accountable to myself, how many pages a day, and give myself rewards and give myself lots of praise. Great job, Leonard. You did a fabulous job. You knocked off 8 pages today. Hooray! I think it's time to go for a walk by the beach. You know, something like that is kind of like how I motivate myself because, you know, writing is a solitary process and we have to have motivation built in to keep us going on the whole writing process. So that's, in a nutshell, what I do.
I love that. Now, when you're doing the checks, and did you have a certain number of checks that you would have to get in order to have that walk on the beach? Or was it just, okay, I'm just going to check this off and I can't get out of my chair until I get my eight pages done. How do you, you know, determine when you get to receive your reward? Because I'm very ADHD. It's like, ooh, a shiny thing. And then I'm off in a different direction. And, oh, and then I come back and, you know, I'm good for 6 minutes and then I'm off again. So how do you stay focused?
You know, Garrett, your problem, I mean, we all have that problem, especially with cell phones and computers and whatever it is. So I don't answer my phone. So I put my phone away. Don't answer my phone when I'm working. And I try to stay off my internet. I might check the internet, my email before I start working just to make sure there's no there's something that has to be immediately done. But then, you know, it's like it's so easy, especially if your computer goes, bing, oh, there's another email. Let's see what else I It's so easy to get distracted these days. And the checks are really for me. Like I realized when I wrote Cuckoo, it took me 3,000 hours. So I didn't realize. It's nice. It was nice to see. Wow. Okay. I put in 3,000 hours to write a novel. Wow. Okay. Sheesh. That's a year and a half of full-time work. I was fascinated with the process. So yeah, when I'm on a roll, these are how many pages that I'll do. Or I know some writers, really you do more of a word count. We kind of think word count than pages. It's about 250 words a page. So, but anyway, that's kind of how I kind of go through it. And I know when I finish 8 pages, God, I feel so good that I finished it. And then, all right, it's time to get a treat, Leonard.
It's time, yeah. So do you think that... You know, and I love the fact that you say, you know, you write 3 days and then you do therapy 3 days. Do you find the break in the writing when you are off doing other things in life? And then when you come back that Sunday night, and just using that as an example, you come back Sunday night to get ready for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday writing. Do you find that helps your writing?
Well, you know, Garrett, the strange thing is, and I mentioned over the break about synchronicity, is that when writing a book has its own dharma. And the dharma is its own life. So we think, writers, we think this is how it's going to go, but then the book has its own dharma. And it follows you throughout life. Even though I may be writing 3 days, it's following me. So I'm going to give you an example. So I remember in Chicago, I just finished a chapter in Kookaburra's Last Laugh. And in the chapter, Peter's car, his windshield gets crashed by neighbors. I said, wow, okay, I wrote this. It was a very dramatic scene, dun, dun, dun. I go to work the next day, and in the evening, I had my last client of the night. I saw him, and then he went out to the parking lot, and he came back, Leonard, somebody just smashed my windshield.
Oh, my gosh.
Whoa, really? And anyway, it was like, shit, I just wrote that the night before. And then it just happened the next day. And as I was talking to him, I realized this guy had a lot of terror about the fact that his windshield was. I says, wow, you know, I didn't include that terror in the story. Huh. I better go back and rewrite that with more terror. Of course, I was compassionate to the client and helped him, call toll road or whatever. But then I was thinking, I was reflecting as I was driving home, wow, there was so much terror in his voice. I said, ooh, I've got to put that in Peter Panowski's, in his emotions. So it's like this. I realize that I'm walking in, here's the real life, whatever real life is, the life of fiction, and they're blending. And I find that in writing fiction, that was happening all the time. Whenever I'm writing fiction, wow, I'm taking the world, I'm writing about a particular topic or something, I'm writing about this character. So in Cuckoo, Peter has a love interest of Teresa Rambodopoulos, a bodybuilder. And then I was thinking, well, you know, I wonder, I don't know that much about women bodybuilders. And so I was walking back from the hospital and got onto the train. This is when I was living in Sydney. And a nurse who worked at the hospital sat next to me. We were chatting away. I said, oh, where are you going? I'm a bodybuilder. I'm going to.
Oh, my gosh, come on.
And so I interviewed her on the train, and then she says, you know, I've got magazines, bodybuilding magazines for women. I says, well, I'd love some. Can you bring some tomorrow? And so, but this is, it's like life was just giving me all the material. I didn't have to search around for stuff. I just keep my eyes open. I said, oh, my God. And I think this, which I find so incredibly fascinating, there's this interconnection between reality, or what we, as I said, life and our fantasy, and they're all blending together.
Oh, my goodness. Well, your next novel is going to be about Peter Panowski, world-famous psychologist and number one all-time best-selling author. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out for you. I love that, though. But isn't that funny, though? I mean, the world does kind of, you know, bring things to you when you least expect it, and you're like, you know, what are the odds of this actually happening? I'm a firm believer that, you know, everything does happen for a reason. You have people in your life, you know, and they're brought to your life when they're supposed to be. And it's funny that it's funny, not ha-ha, but funny, ironic that you're talking about this today, because that's, you know, something I firmly believe in also. Hey, Leonard, question for you. You know, you talked about shutting off, you know, emails and computers and things like that. Are you a paper and pen writer because you've had 7,000 pens and pencil sets given to you, or are you somebody who writes on a computer?
No. If I had to write, my handwriting's horrible. I was in a Catholic grammar school, and the nun always says she would give me assignments because my handwriting was so horrible. And if I had to write a novel by hand, I would not write it. Once computers, I said, oh, my God, this is heaven. I'm a very fast typist. I took typing when I was in high school, and so I'm a very fast typist. And so working on the computer is like, oh, my God, it can't get any better. Well, it can get better because now I can record what I'm speaking into the microphone, and then the voice recognition will type it up for me. So I have to type it in. And I do my journaling by hand, and that seems to make it flow because I'm actually writing with my hand. But when I'm actually writing a book, it has to be on the computer.
Isn't that funny that we have different processes that we use for different, different writing projects? Because I get up every day and I write what's called my God and Angels list. And so I always write out, you know, what I'm grateful for, what I'm asking, you know, for help in my life and that type of thing. But when I sit down to, you know, write like what you're describing, I'm on the computer and I'm typing my 85 words a minute and I'm just burning up the pages and it just goes like wildfire. When you get ready to do your editing, how much editing do you do as you're typing along a million words a minute? Do you just get it on the paper and then come back later and do this? How do you manage your time to edit stuff?
Well, that's another good question, Garrett. I try to get it out there. I mean, I've been writing for such a long time, so even my writing, it flows. So at least everything reads really well. And then I'll come back the next day and then I'll do some editing. But, you know, every book goes through multiple editing processes. My first novel, the first edit took a year and a half. First draft, year and a half. Second draft took me 6 months. Third draft, 3 months. Fourth draft, 3 weeks. And the fifth draft, I had five drafts in there, but each draft you start condensing, but I'm a perfectionist. So I'm slashing away. So if I'm looking at other people's manuscripts and I'm giving them feedback and I'm commenting, I used to use a red pen that traumatized people too much. So I use a blue pen now. Really, I have traumatized people, but I said, you know, I do this to my own writing, so please don't take offense. These are ways that you can improve your writing. You know, there's a lot of extra words you don't really need. You make it pop, you know. I had a writing mentor in Australia, and he would always say, Leonard, use, be economical with your words. Every word, every punctuation mark has to earn their place in your writing. And so he drilled it within me to just be economical. And so if this phrase doesn't really make the sentence or make the passage move, then get rid of it. And so but even then, the Kookaburra's Last Lap was 120,000 words, and I had to knock off 15,000 words because it was just too long.
So do you ever write passages that when, you know, they're on paper and you read it and you go like, oh my gosh, these are the best written words I've ever read ever, and then have to go back and cut them?
Yeah, you know, I've written some phenomenal passages, and then I always have editors go through it. And so I had a woman who, Laura's written 22 novels, romance novels, and so I had her go through my manuscript and just review it in terms of story. And she loved the story, but she says, you know, these are two sections you don't really need. They're really funny, they're good, but they take away from the story. I read it, and I said, she was right. I mean, so, but, you know, I save them, and they may come out in another book. You know, it doesn't mean that they weren't right for Kookaburra's Last Lap, but I had to take them out. I did have to take them out. She was absolutely right, because when I got her feedback, she says, she's right. Yeah, geez. And she says, and then make the ending a little bit more tighter. Take this out. She darn right, absolutely. And so you work with really good editors, and you know, I've had the good pleasure of working with people who give me wonderful feedback, and boy, what they say just makes so much sense, and I just follow the words.
Is that editor by chance Laura Taylor?
Yeah, Laura Taylor, yeah.
Yeah, I've met her at the Southern California Writers Conference, I think last year, something like that. What a wonderful lady. I like her.
Oh, yeah, so. Laura's a terrific lady. Yeah, she was really great. Yeah, she gave me a plug on my on the back of my, she wrote a fast-paced, insightful, laugh-out-loud, funny, and poignant novel. So that was very sweet of Laura, too. She was terrific. Great, great lady and great writer.
Yeah, well, and one of these, we've talked, and it's like one of these days we're going to get her on the show, but I know she's got a trillion things going on in her world. So, you know, like you said, synchronicity, when it's supposed to happen, things will happen. So we've got about 10 minutes left in the show, Leonard, and I would love to talk to you about the exciting world of book promotion and the business of being an author outside of writing the book. I think this is one of the areas that most writers that, and I, you know, we've had New York Times best-selling authors on the show. We've had people who've sold 10 copies of their books and everywhere in between. And I think the common denominator most have are the fact that they love writing more than anything else, and they hate selling the books more than anything else. Do you fall somewhere in the middle? Are you on that spectrum? What is your comfort level with the business aspect of being a writer?
You know, another excellent question, Garrett, is that I'm a creative, so that's my passion, but all authors have to promote their book. I mean, if you don't promote your book, you know, when Cuckoo was published in 96, boy, back in then, there were brick-and-mortar bookstores, so I was getting lots of book signings and newspaper articles and stuff like that. The publisher organized a lot of that for me, which was very helpful. Today, really, it's up to the author to do a lot of the marketing. And the marketplace is the Internet. You know, there aren't many book and more, there aren't many bookstores around anymore with Amazon. So really, we do have to market it. And I believe the Internet is the place to do it. So, you know, I had another book, The Roadmap Home, Your GPS Inner Peace, that was published in 2009. That became an Amazon bestseller, but I hired a company, it was a PR company, to do the campaign for me. So, you know, if you don't have the time or the energy and you have the money, maybe you can get someone else to start promoting it for you. But no matter what, the author must do some promotion and must have to. It's really sharing your baby with the world. I still have to push myself on this, Garrett. I'm still learning, but I that's my mission, is I have to learn. I can't just say, oh, well, I did my book. No, I have to continually learn, put myself out there. And what I'm trying to do now is, I was talking to your neighbors, Michaels, and was saying, you know, I want to get a collaborative group of people who are authors, who've written books, and we can help each other. So if we have this collaborative effort, so as it says, we could Imagine one author trying to promote a book, but you get a collaborative group of authors together helping to promote one another. We've created a community, and the community will create the momentum to get it out there. So that's my vision, is to create this community of authors of who have books out there so we can help one another get the word out there. That's kind of what my current vision is, to really help all of us just share our words with the world.
Okay, so now I've got a follow-up question to that, because if you have, let's say you've got 10 or 20 authors that you get together in this group, and, you know, they share it with their collective, you know, fan base and things like that, I guess the question that I would have is, outside of that group, how do you get your book to become like a viral hit or become an Amazon bestseller without really spending those thousands of dollars on a publicist to say, okay, go buy Leonard's book and it's going to be great? But, you know, at some point, this is where the accountant in me, and you'll never want me to do your taxes, Leonard, so please don't ask. But you say, you know, I've got this great book that's just really fantastic. My mom loves it. My sister loves it. My neighbors love it. And I've sold my 10 copies. But, you know, beyond that, you know, you can put it on Facebook, you can do, you know, whatever, but it, you know, maybe you're just not moving it. And it really does require hiring somebody to do this. You know, is there thought about, okay, I'm going to hire this person for X number of dollars and I need to sell X number of widgets to even just break even with this? You know, where do I make that investment? Do I not make that investment? When do I, fish and cut bait and all of those things? Does that go into your equation, or you just kind of roll a dice?
So true, because, you know, when you do a book, you have to think of the book as a business. And so, yes, it's a creative adventure. If you just got one book and you're happy with one book, so I ghost wrote a book for a Holocaust survivor. And it's just an incredible experience just working with her. I wrote the book, produced the book, and published the book for her. This tickles me, because even in the title, Garrett, the title may have SEO. So the name of the book is Silence and Secrets, A Jewish Woman's Tale of Escape, Survival, and Love in World War II. Here's an 89-year-old woman. The first thing she does when she wakes up is she goes to her computer, goes to Amazon Kindle to see how many Kindles she sold. And I just took her out for her 89th birthday, and I have to chuckle. I mean, you know, she might sell 5 Kindles in a day. But, you know, I'm thinking she has done no marketing, nothing. She hasn't hired anybody. All she's done is put it out. But I think one of the secrets to her, the fact that people are still interested in buying her Kindles on a daily basis, is that in SEO, if they type in Jewish woman, World War II, it's in the title. And so if you can have your title also being able to tie into the SEO in the Google network, it has a chance of being noticed. So, there's so much into strategizing about a book, getting it out there, marketing it. And I think in some ways as authors, we have to become knowledgeable about that process so that we can, so we can get our babies out there. Writing the book, publishing the book, getting it out there is like just giving birth to a baby. Once the baby is born, we have to raise the baby.
And, then they get into the terrible twos, and then they want to get a driver's license.
Yeah. This is okay. All right. What if I'm pregnant again? Gee, I just had the baby. The baby's 1 year old. Oh, okay. Let's just put the baby in the cot or whatever, and I'll work on baby number two. You know, it's just, and I think that my advice to authors is that if you're writing, so let's say you're writing your book, right, Garrett? So
I'm in the editing process now, but yes.
Don't just think of writing one book. Yes, okay, right now your focus is on the one book, but I encourage authors, just not just one book. It may be the second book or the third book. All the hard work goes into that very first book because you're learning the process, the structure. Once you get that first book done, you have the structure, and then you can move on to the second one. And sometimes it may not be to the fourth book or third or fourth book that really things start taking off. Dan Brown didn't really take off until The Da Vinci Code, which was his fourth book. So, you have to think, okay, just keep on The goal is, if it's your passion, you're really called to do it, just keep on doing it and do what you love. And as part of your marketing and your business is, okay, what's the next book? And the other thing, Garrett, is that books are getting smaller. So novels can be a lot bigger, but you know, if it's a self-help book, it can be a smaller book because people really don't want to read really huge books anymore. If they want smaller books, they go on the line, they can read a snapshot, newspaper, you know, let's just go online and see what's the news on the internet. You know, it's the media has changed so much, and so we can write smaller books. So we can write a 100-page book and get our content, our message down to a 100-page book and then get it out into the world.
Well, the hipsterization of our culture, where we have that 1 minute or three, if you get 3 minutes, you know, like on a video or something like that, boy, that's golden. But, you know, we want everything in a minute or less.
We do. We want to chunk down. We want a chunk of information. And even in a book, if there's a, you know, if you have a book and a chunk of information, I always tell my writers, you know, make your book, you know, inspiring, entertaining, educational. So even if it's a novel, I want to be entertained. I want to be inspired. I want to get some kind of message out of it. And, you know, and I really want to be educated. So let's say my books take place in Australia. A lot of people have never been to Australia, so they can find out about Australia by just getting the flavor of the characters and the culture and the places. So I'm educating them really about Australia and about therapy and about life processes and how to really heal and grow.
Well, and we're getting ready to wrap up. I do have a couple more questions here for you, Leonard. After spending 14 years in Australia, why do I not hear any accent in your dialect?
Well, because I was born in Chicago and then I moved to Australia, and then I started speaking more Australian when I was there, and then, you know, I came back in 1990 back to Chicago. My daughter speaks with an Australian accent because she lives there. But sometimes some Australian words will kind of weave into my language. No worries.
No worries, mate.
And a good friend of mine who's Australian, so you know, he helps me with the. So as I'm writing another book, which is it's a kind of a trilogy with Peter Panowski. So the third book is called Cockatoo Dreamtime, which is I'm just in the outlining form. That's comes a little bit later.
Well, I can't wait for that. And so do you have advice for any budding writers that are out there that might be listening today on, you know, just sage words of wisdom that you'd like to implant?
Yeah, you know, I would say, as my writing mentor said, write, write, write. So writing is a process. It's a practice. Make that your practice. And writing is a spiritual practice because whether you're writing a novel or nonfiction, it's a practice in which you are getting your words out there, in which you are expressing yourself. So I would just say write. The other thing is get involved with a group of people, other writers, where you are in like minds. So I was in a writing critique group in Sydney for a number of years, which was phenomenal. It was just like, God, it was like heaven sent. We'd meet at the Sydney pub, and each of us would share our writing. You know, it was just magical. Leonard, my mentor, was there. He'd guide the process. We'd have our beer. We'd share our writing and critique one another. So get involved. And then I did screenwriting in Chicago, and I became a part of a screenwriters group in Chicago for many years too. And you get into a great group of people. You care for each other. You love one another. You really help each other. You cheer each other's on, and you also commiserate when there are failures and losses. Really, so that'd be really two words of advice. Write, get involved with writers' groups, have a critique group, support group, because that's going to be your lifeblood. Both of those things are going to help you in the process. It's really hard to be self-motivated alone in the world without having other people encouraging you, cheering you up the mountain, because we all need them.
I agree. Everybody, it's been Leonard Simcheck. His book, Kookaburra's Last Laugh, is available on Amazon today. There's links to both his website and Amazon's site, so you can go buy his books today. We can't wait to have Leonard back on in the future to talk about his other writing. He's got other stuff, so now he's a regular, folks. We're going to have him back. Real quick reminder, if you've missed any part of the show today, you can just go back and listen to the show on demand. The show is also available on Apple's iTunes as a podcast, so you can go and get the most recent 300 episodes out of the 1,000 or so that we've done and take them with you on the road. I encourage you to do that. We'll be back tomorrow morning with Mark Bagel talking about whatever it is in life that he wants to talk about, probably having something to do with the Supremes. And on Thursday, we'll be doing our rated LGBT radio. I am looking forward to that with Rob Watson. Again, it's my pleasure to do this with and for you. If you know somebody who'd be a great guest on the show, have them contact me and we will get them on. We will see you live tomorrow morning. Be safe and don't drive distracted.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.